listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Gerald, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what happened there.
Okay.
There we go.
Am I on now?
Yep. Thanks, Bruce.
Woo! Wow, I tell you what, technology, ain't it great? Hey, everybody, welcome to the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Wayne will be with us in a few minutes. And, boy, it's good to be here after Mother's Day, post-Mother's Day show here. We got a couple of special guests. Can't wait to talk to our special guests today. Folks, you know, from time to time, we have MMA fighters on here, all different types and styles of fighters. And so today, we are absolutely privileged to have Jared Flash Gordon with us. Jared, say hello, man.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Oh man, and we have Mark Astor, and Mark is a close friend and recovery advocate and attorney. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Bruce, thank you for having both of us on. We're glad to be here. It's good to see you, my friend.
Oh man, always good to have folks on. So, well, you know what? Without further ado, I know that you know Jared. I know a little bit about your story, and I know I'd love to hear it, or you and Mark can kind of talk about your story and how this kind of all began and kind of take it from there.
Sure. Well, as you know, I am a UFC fighter, but obviously my story didn't start there. I'm a recovering addict. IV, drug use, mostly heroin and cocaine. I am almost 7.5 years sober.
Congratulations.
It's been a long journey. I got sober when I was 27. I had my last overdose on Christmas Day, 2015. I went to detox the next day. I used that day. So my sober date is December 27, 2015. I did the whole treatment center thing. I think I went to treatment 12 or 13 times, multiple different facilities, psych wards, hospitals, crisis centers, homeless shelters, therapeutic communities. I was arrested 8 times indirectly or directly because of my addiction. I was actually facing 25 to life in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And by the grace of God, I beat the case.
Wow.
only because the person that was supposed to testify against me didn't come to court.
Wow.
But he was a wanted felon. So if he came to court to testify against me, they would have arrested him also. So I got really lucky. They dismissed the case right there and walked out of jail. I was 22 when that happened. So over the next 5 years until I got sober, I was in and out of facilities. You know, I panhandled, I stole and robbed to get, you know, money to support my habit. Obviously involved in a criminal lifestyle, which I don't say obviously to boast about, but that was just, you know, where my life led me. But you know, I dove headfirst into AA. I went to detox and treatment for the last time in 2015. And, you know, this time I really gave it a go with AA. I got sober in AA. And I found my higher power, who I call Jesus now, God. It's my you know, the person that I look to when I, or the thing, whatever you want to call it, that I look to when I, you know, need help or I'm struggling. And, you know, I took some simple suggestions from other people in recovery that have, you know, gone through what I went through, and I've been sober ever since. A lot of ups and downs in the last 7.5 years, deaths, tragedies, good days and bad days. And, you know, I haven't found a reason to drink or drug because of that. Normally, or when I was in active addiction, if I was super happy and having a good day, you know, it was a reason to celebrate, and I used. If I was having a bad day and I needed to cope with my feelings, I used to, you know, to self-medicate and to make the feelings pass, which obviously didn't work. And it was just a revolving door of insanity. But, you know, that was, so that's like a very shortened version of my story. It obviously started very young when I was a child. I was 9 years old is when I started smoking pot, which is extremely young. Looking back at it now, it's insane to think a 9-year-old has the ability or the, you know, awareness to even do something like that. But, you know, influences in my life and my environment, you know, brought me to that point. And what I know now is that a lot of the pain and the self-medication or self-medicating was, you know, due to trauma as a young kid or, you know, just a child. And, you know, I was a sexual assault victim. I went to a sleepaway camp where I was assaulted by a male counselor. And, you know, as I got older, I didn't make the connection that I was using to bury those feelings, or that was one of the reasons why I self-medicated. And as I got older and I started learning about trauma and, you know, what I was dealing with, it became apparent that, you know, that was definitely a reason for why I led the life that I was living. And obviously a lot of other things happened to me in my life, which gave me a reason in my head, at least, to drink and drug. And there was also a point where I was just having fun as a kid in high school, you know, drinking beers with my friends and just being a, you know, a derelict, hanging out. So there was a time where it was just fun and games, you know, going to parties and having fun with my friends. And then there was also a point where it was just addiction and living a, you know, addict's lifestyle. And that came later on when, you know, I got a little bit into my 20s. And, you know, when you're homeless on the street and you're panhandling, it's not really fun and games anymore. And it came to a point where I just had enough, you know. I needed to change my life. I knew that I would either die or end up in prison for the remainder of my life or a long time. And I just didn't want to do that.
It was like a combination between being sick and tired and jails, institutions, and death type of thing, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in and out of different institutions. And, you know, that became like a normal way of life for me, just being in an institute, you know, becoming institutionalized, even though I never did like long stretches of prison time. Luckily I didn't have to go there, but, you know, I did plenty of time in treatment centers, over a year's worth of time in centers, and other institutions. And, you know, just that alone is enough to kind of become institutionalized. You know, you get used to getting 3 hots in a cot, you know, that, oh, I can get off the street if I check into some sort of facility. You know, I knew that I could say, oh, I'm going to kill myself, and they'll put me in a psych ward and I would be warm and have 3 meals and they would medicate me. You know, I knew that I could get off the street if I had to. And, you know, when it's freezing cold and you're panhandling on the streets of New York City, it's kind of a better option than doing that. So, I learned that lifestyle, which a lot of people live. You know, they know that there's places they can go to just to get a couple meals and, you know, get sober for a little while and clean up and then come back out and do it again. But I didn't want to do that. Actually, I come from a great family. My father is a blue collar guy, but he did very well for himself. I always lived in a really nice home. I grew up on the North Shore of Long Island, which is a very affluent area. And I went to great schools and I never needed anything that I didn't have. Anything I wanted, I got. And it was never, that wasn't my story. But the way I chose to live brought me to those other parts of my life where, you know, as I got older, my parents were like, all right, well, if you're going to live like this, you can't stay here. So I...
Bruce, are you there? Did we lose Bruce? There we go. Sorry, Bruce.
It's all right.
So, you know, they would give me tough love. It's either you get help and you can stay here and we'll help you, or you got to get out. And, you know, I thought I knew what I was doing. So I thought I could do this on my own. And I would try to go live on the street, and it never really worked out for me. Then I found fighting. I graduated high school. So this was before I really got heavy into IV drug use. I wasn't there yet. I found fighting when I was 17, graduated high school, had my first amateur fight 4 months after I started training.
Okay.
I won, and it was, you know, the greatest feeling ever. It was a high as well.
The fighting or the winning?
All of it. I loved training, loved fighting, competing, but winning was the icing on the cake. And when I experienced that, I knew that this is what I would do when I got older.
Okay.
Or at least I would try to do it. And fighting was like a double-edged sword for me, because I hurt my neck about a year later, and that's how I got involved with painkillers and opiates, which eventually led me to heroin use.
Did you hurt your neck from fighting and training? Or
in training, I hurt my neck in training. And I remember I was in a bar with a friend one night, and I was complaining about my neck, and he was like, "Hey, you want a Vicodin?" I was like, "All right." You know, I took one. Within a couple of weeks, I was eating 10, 20, 30 pills a day. And that led me to OxyContin, which led me to heroin use. And, you know, as we all know, that's a lot of Americans' story of how they got addicted to opiates. Even, you know, middle-aged housewives get addicted to painkillers because their doctors say, hey, this is the way to go. And, you know, next thing you know, they're heroin addicts. So that's kind of how it went for me. I didn't go to a doctor and get a script, but I did take prescription pills that, you know, a friend gave to me. So, I eventually did the whole doctor shopping thing though, which I'm sure you know about, going to doctors, crooked doctors, and they're giving you 360 pills a month of high powered opiates, which are really meant for terminally ill patients or people that have been in terrible accidents or had major surgeries. There's no reason anyone with like a neck problem, unless it's like super severe or a back problem, should be taking OxyContin. Even if you break your arm, I don't think OxyContin is a drug of that equal power is a reason for anyone to take medication like that. It's just not, you know, they're so addictive and they're so.
And then, yeah, I mean, and thank God you're in recovery now, because now everybody has a pill press. Everybody can press pills. That's fentanyl. And you think you're getting Xans or Xanax, and it's actually a lethal dose of fentanyl. And so it's like, wow. I mean, folks are really playing Russian roulette more so today in years past. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was a kid in high school, I didn't even know what opiates were really.
Right.
And, you know, things like prescription pills were around, but, you know, heroin or fentanyl wasn't even thing. That was like a, I never even discussed it or, you know, heard about heroin, but I never knew or I never saw it or knew anyone that did it. And now you hear kids in middle school doing fentanyl or doing heroin and they're dying because they think they're taking ecstasy or something, but there's fentanyl. Right.
That's right.
Well, it's a whole new ball game. And luckily I feel like I just missed that cutoff.
You did.
Where like heroin was still a thing when I was around, like, you know, almost 8 years ago now, 7.5 years ago. When you bought heroin, you bought heroin.
Right.
Now there's no heroin. It's all fentanyl, and it's scary, it's insane, and you know, and this sounds crazy, but heroin is like a nostalgic thing now.
Right.
Other guys that did heroin, and it's almost like your favorite pastime.
Yeah. Yeah. Volkswagen Beetle.
Exactly. Wow, heroin. No one will ever know what that is anymore. It's kind of crazy to think that heroin was like a safer alternative.
Like the old musket, like an old musket gun. Yeah. I mean, it's like, what the heck
do you think?
Like, yeah.
But yeah, I'm super grateful. I'm extremely lucky. And, now, you know, I get to use my platform, you know, fighting in the UFC and, you know, being able to reach more people than I guess the average Joe can.
Absolutely.
Help people. So that's where I'm at now.
So Jared, speaking of, let's talk about the platform. Kind of talk about how, because I know there's people want to get to know you better, and I know that, you know, there's folks out there that would love to probably sponsorships and stuff like that, you know, coming your way. So tell us a little bit about the platform. Did you go through so many you know, sub different leagues to the contender series, you know, how did you get to where you're at, what method? Yeah.
So I fought early on for a league called Cage Fury Fighting Championships, which was headquartered in Atlantic City.
Yep, yep.
I fought 4 times in Mexico early on also in a league. That was a Mexican league. I did really well. I won all those fights. And then I came back to CFFC, and I won there, and I fought on Dana White's Looking for a Fight show. Against Bill Aljo, who's now also in the UFC. And I won the fight. Dana signed me that night.
You won the fight against Aljo?
I'm sorry?
Who'd you win the fight against?
Bill Aljo.
Aljo. Yes, sir. Yeah, Bill. Okay.
So that was a year after I got sober. I got signed to UFC.
Okay.
So 2016.
Okay.
Been in the UFC ever since. It's now, you know, I was 28 when I got signed. I'll be 35 in about 5 months or 4 months. So it's been quite the journey. And like I said, a lot of ups and downs. You know, just because I got sober doesn't mean that life's awesome every day. Mm-hmm. that was my journey. And, you know, throughout these last 6 years of being in the UFC, you know, I've built a fan base and, you know, have a decent following on social media, and I get people that reach out to me from all over the world, all over the country, looking for help, looking for, you know, advice, and asking me how I got sober. You know, they ask me all sorts of questions about mental health, depression, anxiety, you know, sexual assault, addiction, and just right. Mental health in general, really, which is something I have dealt with and obviously dealt with. You know, my use, my drinking and drug use was just a symptom of my mental health issues.
Yeah. You know,
that's not my problem anymore. I don't have a drinking and drug problem anymore. I have a thinking problem. And I always had a thinking problem. I just used the drugs and the alcohol as my self-medication, and which became a problem in itself. Obviously I had to deal with that. And now that I'm past all that, I'm back to square one. I still have a thinking problem,
Now
I have to work every day
to
deal with that also.
Use recovery concepts and what you've done in your recovery to address that thinking problem. Would you say it's just a thinking problem or also problems with living or problems with living on life's terms?
It's an everyone problem. Everyone, you know, you might not turn to drugs and alcohol, but you can turn to eating or sex or food or gambling or exercise or soda, you know, anything to get you outside yourself to make you feel better.
Right. Self-medicate.
You know, it could be, you know, you could be addicted to shopping. You see it all the time. People just can't stop buying stuff. That stuff will never fulfill you. All of the shiny things and expensive things that I have make me happy for a couple days. And then I'm like, why did I buy this? Why did I spend? I could have paid my mortgage off, or I could have, I could have put this money towards something more useful, you know. So you see it all the time. People deal with their problems in different ways, you know, and that's why I call it a thinking problem. You know, how am I thinking today? Where's my head?
We all have thinking errors and we all have to combat those. And you're absolutely right. Well, let me ask a few more questions. I know, Mark, we're going to bring you on here in a second, so don't feel
neglected. Don't worry. Listen, I love listening to Jared. I'm a big fan too, so I'm happy to listen.
I have to bust out the usual questions here. So, right. I mean, some folks feel like you're a newcomer, but you're not a newcomer to UFC. You've been in the franchise for quite a while. Make no mistake about it. So looking back thus far, and I know, and I hope and pray, right? You have a very, very, very long career. I hated that Glover Teixeira, you know, finally retired. He's out of Connecticut now. I think I was crying, but I always love to see these guys go into their 40s. You know what I mean? And if they can. But anyway, looking back, what was your most? And I hate to say, don't take it the wrong way, but what's your most disappointing fight in terms of either you were disappointed with the outcome, you're disappointed with yourself? Do you have a professional fight that comes to mind that you could weigh in on that if you wanted to?
I mean, there's a couple definitely that come to mind. These last two that I had were very confusing. The last fight I had, I was winning, and then I got headbutt. And they stopped the fight, and they called it a no contest. Okay. So obviously I was very... You know, at first when it happened, I didn't know what happened. I was confused. I was like, you know, and then they told me, oh, you got headbutt. It's a no contest. But I didn't win. I didn't lose, but I didn't win.
Right.
In a fight that I was winning. So it's very, you know, if I was losing the whole way and then the fight ended that way, I would kind of just be like, oh, you know, I guess I got lucky.
Right.
So that was upsetting. The one before that was also very frustrating. I think I clearly won that fight, and most of the world thinks I won that fight against Patty. But the judges gave it to him.
Yeah.
You know, I look at that fight and I think all different kinds of things.
So now I'm going to ask you, how did you cope with that? Certainly the headbutt thing may be a little bit, I don't know, but I'll just lump them together for the sake of the show. Like how did you cope with those challenges? Yeah.
So, I mean, after the Patty one, I was obviously really upset. I'm still not over it. I'm still pissed off. But I did gain basically like worldwide recognition because of it. So it grew my following, and you know, I'm way more recognized now because of the way.
Brother, I'll agree with it. I'm not an expert. I've been around a little bit, but I've never seen a situation where an individual, let's say, lost a fight, okay, or per scorecard, and yet, you know, the world, you know, just like you said, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it was tough, you know, and. But I think my stock still rose with that fight. big time. Oh, and even though it wasn't the most exciting fight, and I guess I could have done some different things in the fight, or I definitely could have done different things in that fight. I can't change the past, though.
No, right. Well, it's almost like a biblical story. I mean, it's going to make the future so much sweeter and bright. You know what I mean?
Well, just as a biblical story, like.
So, well, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like Job. You know the book of Job?
Yeah.
Of the fight world, getting like tortured and frustrated and everything taken away from me. And, you know, I'm still trying to sing praises to God in this scenario. And then, you know, I got a big fight against Bobby Green. I was like, all right, they treated the fight with Patty as if I won. You know, it was a forward fight, the next one.
Right.
And then I went in there so prepared. And then the headbutt. So I was like, you know, I came home. These last 3 weeks have been some of the hardest 3 weeks in probably the last 7.5 years of my sobriety.
Yeah.
And I've been cursing God, telling my wife that I'm done going to church.
Ooh.
Done with all this nonsense. It's all fake.
Telling you, brother, and I know I'm an outsider, and it's easy for me to be an armchair quarterback, right? I'm telling you that these challenges, right, are just going to make what's yet to come so much sweeter, okay? Trust me.
Well, when I look back at my life, I can look at everything and say, all right, everything had to happen the way it happened.
Right.
But now... When you're in the valley, it's so hard for me to say everything's going to be all right. You know, I want what I want now. You know, I don't want to wait and see the silver line. I don't want to wait 6 months.
No, you're right. No, you don't.
Silver lining in all of this. But, you know, like I said, it's been the hardest thing I can do is to just have faith. And I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm trying. Yeah. I'm still praying. I'm still asking.
Good.
Guidance, and you know, I'm trying to do the right thing.
Absolutely,
to help others and be of service to people. Absolutely.
And I do like that Job analogy, and hopefully nobody's asking you to forsake your God, but I do like the Job analogy nonetheless. But yeah, just the way of those two fights and what happened in those things, that they almost seemed kind of extraordinary, and I mean extraordinary, just like outside forces type of stuff.
Multiple people have said to me, you know, like MMA reporters, like, oh man, you're like the unluckiest guy ever. And I'm like, dude, you know, like, I mean, just the way the last couple of things have played out, it's been pretty unlucky. I've been in the gym, still training. I'm looking to see what's next. You know, I'm still recovering. So I got a slight concussion. From the last one. So I'm not sparring. I'm not getting punched yet because there's no reason for me to be taking trauma to the head right now until my coaches and the people around me think I'm ready and I feel ready. But I'm asking my manager, what's next? You know, I'm waiting to see what's up. And so only time will tell at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll ask one last question. So you're in this kind of a Simon Says position, right? Because you're kind of waiting, like you've gone to your coach or your management saying, hey, okay, right? But you just have to literally wait to see what, I guess, is given to you. I hate to say that, if that's the wrong choice of words, let me know. But
it's the right words, I think.
That's why. Okay, good. And again, brother, I mean, my hat's off to you interesting, you're having the patience of Job with that.
So. I'm not. On camera, I might come off like I am, but you should have seen me yesterday. If you could be a fly on the wall with and my wife, you'd say, man, this guy's a crybaby.
Uh-oh.
I'm a big sore loser, man. I don't like losing. I want to win. That's the name of our game is winning. You know?
Exactly. All right. Well, Mark, brother, how did you guys I've known Mark for years now and involved in the alcohol treatment and Baker Act and those things in Florida. But Mark, how'd you get into this fray here, brother?
So I'm the CEO of a law firm. We're based down here in Boca Raton and also Boston, Massachusetts. And we specialize in helping individuals in crisis because of substance use and mental illness. That's what we do. And I started the firm 8 years ago out of the library here in Boca, February of 2016. At the time I was flat broke. I had no money, but I had an idea. And I had close family members and friends who had substance use and mental health issues. I had a sibling who, just a couple of days after I buried my father, who had a serious mental health breakdown. So I've experienced this stuff firsthand. I've had very close friends call me and, you know, share intimate stories of family members having issues with substance use and mental health. So I really had a desire to open up a law firm that would help those folks. When I first started, I had no idea how I was going to do it, but I just sort of started to do it. And, you know, I let the universe take over, as it were. You know, I always had a passion for the martial arts. I'm a skinny Jewish kid growing up in England. My father told me at some point and someday I'd have to learn how to take care of myself. So trained in martial arts for about half my life and lost close to 20 years. Trained in Krav Maga, which is the Israeli system. I got very blessed to find an instructor who, in my opinion, probably the best instructor of civilian Krav Maga anywhere on the planet. And I've trained in Israel a couple of times, so I know what's good. I know what's not good. And I hope he's listening because he is the best of the best. So I always had a passion for the martial arts. I used to love watching UFC. Fortunately, about a year ago, I was finally able to financially in a position where I could actually afford to take a vacation and make my car payment. And I got invited on to a podcast. And there was a young lady there who was sort of the manager. And I said, thank you for having me on the podcast. Can I take you to lunch? So we made lunch plans and I shared with her, you know, sort of a dream of mine, a vision of mine, that one day I'd be able to help, you know, some MMA fighters, you know, help them in some way. And she said, I think I have the guy that you need to meet. And I said, well, who is it? She said, well, there's this fighter out there. His name is Jared Flash Gordon. I said, is that the guy who fought Paddy the Batty? She said, that's him. I said, he won that fight. He got screwed. He absolutely won that fight. She said, I know somebody who knows him and I'm going to make an introduction. So we made the introduction and I met Jared through our mutual friend, Marco. And I said to Jared, you know, come have breakfast with me and my now fiance. And he came with his wife and we had some other people there. I sat down with him and truthfully, and I'm still sort of figuring this out. I said, listen, I've never done this before. I really don't know how to do it, but here I can help you, you know, I can help to sponsor you for the next several months, and I'm going to commit to being at the fight. Now, the fight was at the UFC Apex, and I didn't realize back then what the UFC Apex was and how much it would cost to be there. But I committed to going there, and several car payments later, we did show up, and it was great, and it was an amazing experience.
Maybe you're part of the VIP experience, babe.
VIP. There's no doubt about that. it was an amazing experience. And, you know, I mean, what's really neat about the Apex is that you are within 20 or 30 feet of the cage. There's only literally 70 people in the whole arena. Right. It's a very intimate way to watch a fight. And you can hear every pop, smack, bang, you know, that's going on in the fight. I mean, we were really close to the cage. And, you know, obviously, you know, to see what happened to Jared was heartbreaking for him. And also, you know, his wife was there. And, I mean, we were devastated for both of them. Both of them are amazing people. He's a walking miracle. He really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you got that. And, you know, to have that Apex as your one of your first experiences, you know, while you said it was a little bit of resources to get there, but man, you know, that is a great way to experience a fight. And so I'm glad that, UFC, you know, had that as one of their venues, particularly around COVID era and those things.
What's kind of cool about it is, so around the cage, there's like these huge, there's like three really big flat screen TVs. So you can, because ESPN is covering this thing live, so you can sort of see the replays. And so it's sort of a neat way of seeing things when you sort of see it live and then you sort of look up the TV and see the replay. What was interesting about the fight, the last fight that Jared had, was that initially They called the other guy as the winner. Well, everybody in the audience went absolutely ballistic because they could see the replays and it was very clear that it was a headbutt. And it was also very clear that it was intentional.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, they finally called it a no contest, but truthfully, they should have disqualified this other guy. I mean, I'm happy to say it. They should have disqualified him Jared was winning that fight, and what was done was just not right. It really wasn't right. He got the short end of the stick. And so, you know, hopefully things get right. I know that Paddy wants another fight with Jared, because even Paddy knows that Jared won that fight. And seeing as how Paddy is busy recovering from the broken ankle that Jared gave him during the fight, hopefully by the end of the year, think that gets righted and Jared goes in there and actually and gets the win that he deserves and will most certainly get.
And look, I mean, you know, for probably Paddy to want to do that, that speaks of some character that's like, hey, man, let's do this rematch, you know, and go toe to toe, you know, so hopefully that fight will happen. And I know, I'm not Dana White or Shelby or any of that, but I would want to have those guys fighting. I think, you know, millions would be, you know, doing some serious pay-per-view to see that fight. So,
well, Jared has certainly paid his dues. He's owed a big fight. Just to say this, I think there's a bit sort of a misconception. They think that people see, well, the UFC and all these guys are making boatloads of money, and that simply is not true. I mean, if you're Conor McGregor or one of the belt holders, that's fine. But for guys like Jared, you know, they're not getting paid a whole lot of money to get punched in the face.
No.
You know, and it's not just the getting punched in the face during the fight. It's getting punched in the face during all the training. And I had an opportunity to go and see Jared train. Now, I've trained in martial arts. I've geared up and banged with some of my guys. But you got to go and see these guys train. I mean, I went to see him train one day. You got a room full of, I had to be at least 50, 60 guys, all professional fighters, all sparring. I mean, if you didn't know it was sparring, you'd think there were 60 guys who were having real fights.
Yeah.
And I got to see Jared in the cage. These guys are unbelievable athletes. What they do is, there's very few people on the planet who can do what they do. And you don't appreciate that until you go and see it. These guys are world-class athletes, and they don't get paid a lot of money to entertain us. It's not an easy way to make a living.
No, it isn't. And, you know, this is a calling, right? This is a, like you said, it's a platform, but it's a calling, but it's also a lot more, you know, than I just want to fight to make money, or I want to fight for fame or fortune. There's a lot with Jared's trajectory and that's why I want to talk about that, because, you know, I think that means a lot for people or sponsors to say, wow, you know, this guy has depth to his story, and this is the brand, right? This is the brand that I'm promoting. This is the brand that I'm sponsoring. You know what I mean? And so that's, you know, as you guys move forward and Jared has moved forward and, you know, get sponsors lined up and stuff like that. And so I know there's probably recovery partners out there that would love, you know, that I think, you know, should connect with you and possibly have a discussion with y'all about sponsorship. And
absolutely. I hope there's folks that are watching who say, you know what, I want to help this guy, you know, and they can certainly reach out to me and I'll make the connection for them. I mean, I have no, you know, financial stake in this. I'm just trying to help somebody. It's really that simple.
And same here. Right. And folks seeing the show that know me
I know the same about you, because I know you helped me with another client of mine who shall remain anonymous. Hopefully he's watching. He's also a big fan of the UFC. You know what I'm talking about. And there was many times I called you over the last, what, 7-8 years? And I said, I picked your brains. I said, Bruce, I don't know what to do with this guy. And you did, and you were very grateful. Right? You never said, hey, it's going to cost you. You were more than happy to give me counsel when I needed it. You've been a good friend.
I think I was we had some good calls and bad calls.
I know I shocked you because I got him out only three times.
But. Hey, man, you did the work.
I'm a fighter, but just in a different arena.
And there's, you know. Yeah, there was some finished work, but yeah, man, no, it was a great job, and appreciate our collaboration, as it were. And there's actually I think another card left to play, if you will, that we
had discussed. I believe so.
We'll see what's going on there. But yeah, I mean, that's what I like about this program, Jared, is that I've had other folks come in here, you know, trainers. I had Travis Luter, he's down the street here, you know, Fort Worth, got Kevin Holland, those people, Fortis MMA is nearby. You know what I mean? My son is kind of, My youngest son is doing some stuff with Bubba in Central Texas and looking at, I wouldn't say glory kickboxing, but he's looking at some kickboxing stuff. And much to my surprise, he has kind of a Sage Northcutt look. I hate to see his looks get beat up. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, I'm just kidding. guess a little joke there, but it's like, man, you're going to, you know, that you see that nice nose and those, you're going to, you know. But so anyway, but no, we've had fighters. I got fighters, y'all, that are Uber drivers. I got fighters that are cashiers at Walgreens. You know what I mean?
Trust me. I did it. I worked jobs, you know, before I got into UFC. And then even when I was in UFC in the beginning, I had to do other things to make an income. And, you know, until you establish yourself in the sport, in the UFC or Bellator or one of the other big leagues, PFL, you know, it's hard to just get by and fighting.
Right. And we could do a whole other show, but how are we doing on time? Some of these folks that are in a dry spell, don't make a bad decision. Don't make a risky decision because you're in a dry spell. Like, don't get into this gambling stuff. If you know what I mean, there was several folks that got caught up in a gambling betting thing, and it could have even disastrous legal consequences for at least one or two of the folks, if not more, once the feds peel the onion. But yeah, just holy smokes. Don't get greedy. Don't make a bad decision. Don't be hasty. So it is kind of a delicate balance. So Jared, so tell us, I mean, so here we are, 2023, it's May 2023. I'm kind of, you know, date stamping it. What are some of your next goals for the next, let's say, few months? I know we've talked about possible rematches and other fights, but let's talk about your professional UFC goals for the next, let's say, three or so months.
So bottom line, I want to get back in the win column. I would like to get a finish and make a bit of a statement, you know, that I mean, I think I've proven that I belong. I don't think that's the case. I need to just like,
definitely.
I belong, but I want to show that I'm still here, you know?
Sure.
So I would like to have a fight where I, you know, put a stamp on it, you know, make it quick, hopefully, and get a dominant win. And, you know, I want to get ranked. I want to be ranked. You know, that's always been a goal. That's the goal of every fighter, to get ranked top 15, right? And then work your way up from there. So, you know, I got to see what's on the horizon, hopefully get a good fight, and then maybe get a top 15, or after this next fight, get a top 15, and then, you know, work my way up from there. But yep. I try not to project too far.
Right.
I want to be a realist and, you know, take things slowly and be smart. So that's the goal. Get back in there, you know, make sure I'm healthy, recovered from this mild concussion, and then you know, show the world that, like, I'm still here and that I deserve it. I'm 34, so, you know, I'm in my prime, but I don't have that much time left. So I got to, you know, I want to get back in there sooner rather than later, but, you know, knowing that I'm healthy and ready to go.
Right. And so, you know, I mean, I kind of see, like, I don't want to say a Gilbert Burns, but I see he's a guy that can be ready to go. As long as let me go, I'm ready to go. You know, if somebody backs out, you need me to go in 3 weeks, don't have to do a camp. I'm ready to go. I'm here to fight. I want to, you know, I'm here to take on those challenges. And some of them might come out of nowhere. And that's the thing, right? And it's real smart of you to say that, right? Because you're not thinking too far down the line, because the person you are, the life that you're going to be in two fights from now, right, is going to be significant. It's going to be some significant differences there, right?
100%.
And that means everything in terms of problems with thinking versus, and also just like, wow, you know, in terms of contracts and those things, you know, what does that mean? You know, now this guy's got two wins behind his belt. Good Lord, you know, the next go round, the price of tea in China goes up a bit there with some wins. So. Uh-huh. For your business acumen. So yeah, brother, Well, that's good to hear. And I'm excited, you know, to, you know, have you, you know, come on the program today. And also, I appreciate your transparency about your past, you know, and to show how mixed martial arts was a vehicle that as well as your program, your personal program of recovery and your higher power, but all those things working together that have made you where you are today. And the fact that the unmanageabilities that you're, isn't that interesting? You know, I was powerless and my life had become unmanageable. And brother, you've hit some serious, like you said, serious unmanageabilities in the last couple of months, right?
Oh yeah.
And yet, you know, by the grace of God, you know, you are still sober, brother. Right. Yes. And just hearing that, man, you know, that's, I'd much rather hear about you surviving that than these, you know, other fights. Just kidding, brother. But no, that
you're right.
You know, it shows your intestinal fortitude, brother. And I appreciate that. And I know everybody who knows what we're talking about is going to know about that as well. So, okay. So I'll start with Jared and I'll go with Mark. So Jared, how can our viewers and listeners reach you or plug into your social media? If you could, give us your Instagram, Twitter, and the usuals.
You can reach me on Instagram at Jared Flash Gordon. On Twitter, it's JFlashGordonMMA. And you could also contact me through my website, which is JaredFlashGordon.com.
Okay. And I sent you some DMs too, so watch for those. Okay. Thanks. And Mark, how can folks, you know, if they're interested in either sponsorship or they're interested in also the work that you're doing?
Yep. So the main website is drugandalcoholattorneys.com. That's drugandalcoholattorneys.com. Or you could just Google me, Mark G. Astor, attorney. You'll find me. And I'm going to give my email as well, because if anybody is interested in helping Jared, certainly welcome to contact me and I can make the connection for you. So you can email me at Mark, M-A-R-K, at Astor, A-S-T-O-R, lawfirm.com. Mark at AstorLawFirm.com. And I'll make that connection for you.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So that's great. So yeah, folks, anybody interested in sponsorship, that would be, this is the man to sponsor, you know, hands down.
100%.
Hands down, 200%. So if you're looking to sponsor somebody, this man is definitely one to strongly consider for sure. So, well, great. All right, folks. And again, we can be reached here on the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook, Concierge_Coaches on Instagram. I'm B Cameron 2 on Instagram. And ConciergeCoach.net. And folks, this program is going to be on Apple Podcast here in a few days. And then from there, it's going to be on iHeartRadio and iHeartMedia. And so this show is going to be aggregated all over the place. So we're the little podcast that could, Jared. So I appreciate you taking a chance on us and showing up for our little program here. And it means a lot. So thanks so much for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Okay. And Mark, thank you for coming on, man. Thanks for making the connection. So
I'm always happy to help you, Bruce. You've been more than a good friend over the last several years.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. I need to get out to Florida and we're definitely going to connect again. Seems like yesterday I was out there, but it's been a while. So
in that case, Jared and I would love for you to take us to dinner. We appreciate the invitation.
Here it is. You'd love that. Well, I'd love to take you to dinner. Absolutely. All right, folks. Well, look, have a great week. And thank you for listening to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. We'll be back next week with another fantastic program. In the meantime, stay safe, stay blessed, and we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.